Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Hudson, welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. I'm delighted to welcome back Michael Hitchborn to Church and Culture. He's been on a number of times, does such great work. He is the founder and president of Lepanto Institute, well-known figure in the pro-life movement. He lives out in rural Virginia. I must say I've driven there to have dinner with his wife, Alyssa, and their six kids. Before he founded Lepanto Institute, he was with the American Life League for 7.5 years, director of the Defend the Faith Project. Also, while he was at American Life League, I know this because I worked closely with Michael on it, he began to scour the budget of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops in all of its various entities and found that there were a number of quote-unquote partners that the USCCB was funding through one of their programs, especially Campaign for Human Development, that were totally out of sync with Catholic teaching on things like abortion and gay marriage and obviously contraception. And I got to know Michael quite well during this. We really have a high regard for him and his research. I think he's and Elizabeth Yore, probably the only two people in the country that are doing this kind of work. And so, Michael, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thanks so much, Dio. It's always good to talk to you.
How are things going with the Lepanto Institute? We had you on shortly after you started doing the work. How's it going?
Things are going very well. I have to say, I've kind of been all over the world recently. I've been to Kenya. I've been to Nigeria. Got sick in Nigeria. I've been to Rome and Romania. So I've traveled quite a bit, kind of taking a closer look at some of the things that are going on.
Of course, I have a special regard for Romania, given that my son, who you know,
yep,
is from there. When we spent a week or more over there, and I got to know the Roman Catholic Archbishop there in Bucharest. Did you meet him by any chance?
I was in Cluj, so no, I didn't get to meet him in Bucharest.
Quite a guy. He was a communist fighter, and quite
awesome.
A hero. But here's what we want to talk about today, Michael. This work you've done is very, very important for this reason, I think, that the USCCB takes donations, obviously, from Catholics all over the country. But that's really only, 60% of their budget. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the other 40% comes from the federal government, or comes from governments. And there's really two things we want to pursue, and we'll pursue one in the first part of the interview and one in the second. The first part of the interview, I want you to talk about what is the impact on the culture of the Bishops' Conference by being so reliant on federal funding. And the second part of the interview after the break, I want to talk specifically about, because the USCCB is a lobbying organization. It has lobbyists that go to Congress, knock on the doors of representatives and senators, and ask for money to be given to the conference. And they also lobby the Congress about what should be in the budget regarding NGOs that they work with. And as I've already said, you found out years ago that many of these NGOs are not what we would call good guys. But let's start with, what do we know about the amount of money that the USCCB receives from the federal government, and what is it for?
Well, the USCCB is kind of a funny entity. It gets a lot of money as its own organization from the federal government in order to resettle refugees. That's really one of the largest blocks of government funding that the USCCB receives. But the other side to this is that Catholic Relief Services is an official project of the USCCB, but it files its tax returns and funding reports separately from the USCCB. So it's a project of the USCCB, but it files separately. Now, it is interesting. You pointed out that the USCCB gets about 60% of its funding from the general populace and 40% from grants in the federal government. But with Catholic Relief Services, that number's flipped. Catholic Relief Services gets about 60% of its funding from the federal government, and then it gets about 20% from outside grants, you know, like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and organizations like that, and then another 20% comes from the pew sitting Catholic. So you look at the way it kind of breaks down, the vast majority of the funding received by both the USCCB and Catholic Relief Services together really does come from the federal government.
And the projects, you've tracked the work of Catholic Relief Services in Africa. That's one reason you were down there, other than probably learning how to, you know, do tribal dances or something. But you do dance, so I actually used to teach dancing. But if we're going to talk about both CRS and the Bishops' Conference, the question becomes, especially in the case of CRS, it sounds like they become more or less a vendor of the federal government.
That's exactly right. And it reflects in their lobbying efforts, too. The three largest government grants that go to Catholic Relief Services come from the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, called PEPFAR, another entity called the Global Fund, and a third entity called USAID. Those three agencies combined make up the vast majority of Catholic Relief Services funding. And every year, at least as far back as 2011, as far as I can tell, and probably earlier than that, CRS and the USCCB have been lobbying Congress to maintain large amounts of funding to those agencies. And, you know, basically what they're doing is they're lobbying for their own paycheck.
Right. So
now, it's problematic that they're actually lobbying for that kind of money because those three agencies are out there distributing contraception. The Global Fund has actually given grants to Planned Parenthood in several different countries around the world. And, you know, just to be perfectly frank, I don't think that the bishops of Africa would appreciate very much that CRS and the USCCB are lobbying Congress to maintain funding to organizations that are fighting against their efforts to maintain a culture of life in their own dioceses.
Yes, you sent out an email to your list. And by the way, later on we'll tell our listeners how to get on your Lepanto Institute list. Saying that you didn't understand why the bishops were lobbying the Congress so hard on the budget that was just released to increase funding for, is it called PEPFAR?
PEPFAR, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that stands for what?
The President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. It was started by George Bush in 2003.
But it has become a platform for contraception and abortion, correct?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
But yet the bishops, at least the lobbying arm of the bishops, I want to be very careful and not, you know, say every single bishop in the United States knows about this or approves of it. At least the lobbying arm, and there's, last I looked, there's about a 9 or 10 specific lobbyists at the bishops' conference. Mm-hmm. And the last time I looked, they were all lay people except for one, I think. And it makes you scratch your head. Why would they be so insistent on this, on keeping this entity funded? Why is it in the interest of American Catholics?
And you know, that really is kind of the million-dollar question. What happened in 2017, when I first broke the story about CRS and the USECB lobbying Congress in 2016, I pointed out that they had asked Congress to maintain funding to PEPFAR and to USAID. One of my supporters wound up contacting the USECB and asking them, what's going on? Why are you doing this? And the response was, well, because PEPFAR and USAID save lives. And so this supporter of mine replied and said, but what about the fact that they're spreading contraception? And the response was, well, they have exceptions clauses so that CRS can receive funding from them so that they don't have to participate in that. Now, pay close attention to the bait and switch that took place. My supporter was asking about, why are you asking Congress to maintain funding to organizations that are pushing contraception? And the response was, CRS gets money, and they don't have to participate in the contraception. But that still doesn't clarify the fact that you and I and all other Catholics and actually everybody else in the country, on behalf of the USECB now, are being asked to provide our own funding, our tax money, to two agencies that are pushing contraception. And that's really what's the crux. Now, you ask the question, why would the USECB be doing this? Why would CRS be doing this? And the reason is I think that it's a quid pro quo. They go in there and they scratch PEPFAR's back and they scratch USAID's back and they say, you know what, we ask Congress to keep funding your organizations. We put the full force and weight of the Catholic Church behind this lobbying effort. And when we go ahead and apply for a grant, we're hoping that we'll be at the top of your list.
Oh, so it's a pass-through.
Oh, absolutely.
So this, these millions of, I think it was $98 million that the USCCB received last year in 2017, mostly for immigration resettlement,
mm-hmm.
Is that where it comes from? It comes from one of these two organizations?
Well, no. The immigration money comes from the U.S. Migration Services. And so that money is being used to help resettle refugees, migrants, you know, mostly people from highly Muslim countries, in fact, especially under the Obama regime. And so what they were doing, and it's interesting because CRS and various other agencies were getting paid about $2,500 per person that they resettled. And so when Donald Trump issued his state, you know, tried to pass this moratorium on refugees coming from Muslim countries, it would have necessarily reduced the number of refugees coming into this country, which would also reduce the number of people that the USCCB would resettle, which means less money for them.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you seen the budget in detail enough to know how PEPFAR, how well PEPFAR did in receiving money? And how, you know, what about CRS? How did it do?
Well, no, this is kind of the funny thing about trying to figure out the American budget. When we look for a budget, we're looking for, you know, itemization. You know, what exactly is getting funding, what isn't getting funding. But Congress doesn't really want us to see that. They just want to say, well, you know, these things are getting funded and these things aren't, and, you know, it's, our people are getting funding and your people aren't. It's this big shell game.
It's very hard to pin it down.
It's really hard.
Back when I was, between 2004, when I was actively advising the White House on Catholic matters, one thing that was under my scrutiny was this very issue. And I must say, to get hard numbers on, you know, what is going to the USCCB and where it's coming from, and what it is for, how it is spent, what percentage of the USCC budget it actually is very difficult.
It's extremely difficult.
I mean, you've done better than anybody I know in getting that information.
Well, because eventually, at some point, somebody actually produces a hard number and you can verify it. But it's not going to show up in any of the budget bills or any of the line items that come out of the Congress. Even when you look at Donald Trump's proposed budget for 2019, he says things like, well, we're going to provide an increase of $490 million to PEPFAR, and we're going to increase an extra $1 billion to USAID. But then when you look at some of the things that people are reporting about this budget, they're saying, oh, no, PEPFAR is getting slashed by half of its funding, and USAID is losing 30%. But nobody cites any hard numbers. They can't point to a
item. The CRS and the USCCB, as you write here on your website, LepontoInstitute.org, they sent a letter to Congress asking for $330 million for USAID and $5.67 billion for PEPFAR.
Yes.
What did they get?
As far as we know, that was the budget that passed. That was also the last budget that was passed under the Obama administration before we switched over to Trump. So,
but what's in this recent budget that came out?
That's what, hard to pin down. It was only recently passed, but apparently it's a temporary budget. It's not one that actually itemizes any of the real figures. It just kind of gives a gloss overview as to what they're going to have in the budget. It doesn't actually specify PEPFAR, USAID, or even the Global Fund.
So you can't get a line-by-line budget?
No, I can't get a hard fact on that, not yet.
Let's ask this, though. Okay, so if Catholic Relief Services gets its $330 million, and that is, say, 60% of its budget, as you said, how objectionable? I mean, obviously Catholic Relief Services does a lot of great things. I mean,
sure.
They're right there when there's disasters, weather disasters, or any other kind of military disasters impacting people. Have you been able to pin down just how much of their programming connects to the issues that we're concerned about, contraception, abortion, and so forth?
Well, you know, trying to get into all of CRS's programs, I mean, I think they've got about 180 different programs running throughout the world at any given time. So, it's, you know, figuring out what percentage of them are involved in anything untoward is going to be difficult. But what I can say is that every year, because of the way these budgets work, the grants that they get from PEPFAR works, when CRS gets a grant from PEPFAR, it's not just a, here you go, here's a project, and you go do it. What PEPFAR does, it says, all right, here's the program that we are going to implement, and we're going to take bids from different organizations on who's going to be the lead partner on this particular project. And so they'll get all these bids. If CRS wins one, they say, okay, great, you're in charge, here are your partners, and you're going to partner with CARE International, you're going to partner with Save the Children and the Futures Group and JPIGO, and you're going to implement this program. And CRS is going to say, okay, hold on, this time out, we're not going to actually do anything that promotes contraception or anything like that in our program. And PEPFAR says, great, no problem. So they give the pass-through grant to CRS. That grant then gets disseminated to these other agencies. But these other agencies are extremely pro-abortion. They are themselves spreading contraception. And even though CRS says, well, none of this funding is going directly to any of that, everybody knows that money is fungible. So when you're giving money to an organization like Save the Children, who's out there lobbying for abortion in multiple countries around the world, you're spreading the impact, size, and scope of that agency. It's a partnership that should never be allowed, but CRS is engaging in it, and they're using a proportionalist argument to say that, you know, it's okay for...
Oh, you better tell our listeners what proportional means.
Yeah.
Don't assume.
Okay. So proportionalism is the idea that as long as you can weigh the good and bad in a particular decision, that if the good outweighs the bad, then it's a good and moral decision. This is proportionalism. It was condemned by Pope St. John Paul II in Veritatis Splendor. So it is a false moral paradigm. It's not one that can be employed morally in any sense. But it seems to be the idea that CRS utilizes most of the time when it's justifying its partnerships.
Well, I remember a conference call that I was on with you when you were talking to the head of the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. It's probably, 10 years ago now, or 8. And you were discussing this issue of, you know, partnerships and coalitions and so forth. And you had the facts about a number, I mean, 20 or so, I forget how many exactly, in nonprofits that were receiving funds from the Bishops' Conference that on their websites and in their official statements were pro-abortion, pro-contraception, pro-gay marriage.
Yep.
And tell our listeners what the argument was that we both heard.
Well, the argument that we got in response was, well, that's guilt by association. If an organization that's on a coalition, they, you know, that organization doesn't have control over what the coalition does. Well, of course they do. If you're going to partner up with an organization that says, hey, we're going to spread abortion, you have a moral obligation to remove yourself from it.
Well, you know, it seems to me, Michael, you know, and I said this at the time on the phone, that if you're putting money in an organization where one of its missions is to promote abortion,
mm-hmm.
even though the program it's going into, say, is to feed the poor,
yeah.
you are providing overhead to the entire organization, not just funding a program, because anybody that's familiar with how grants work in nonprofits is that grants come in for programming, yes, but a certain percentage of that goes to overhead, because overhead being salaries, overhead being benefits, overhead being rent, etc. And so you're really bolstering the life of that organization.
Well, it goes a step further than that, too, because even if you were to say, hey, all right, we're going to give you $10 million. It's in a lockbox, and you can't possibly use that money for anything outside of this particular project. So the organization takes that $10 million, and they go and they implement the project. So what are they going to do? They're going to hire employees. They're going to purchase resources.
That's overhead.
That's overhead. So they're going to purchase all of these things that aren't going to, you know, for the sustaining of that project. But then once the project's over, they are in possession of all of those materials. It belongs to them. It expanded the size and scope of the organization. You know, I met with Carolyn Wu back in 2012.
Now, she was head of Catholic Relief Services.
Yeah.
And you had a face-to-face conversation with her.
Yep. And I explained this very thing. I said, everybody knows that money is fungible. And so I told her, you know, you give money to an organization like Save the Children, and that organization, you're giving them a clean face. You're giving them access to Catholics on the ground. You're making it appear as if they...
Yeah, good. You're giving them the Catholic Good Housekeeping seal
exactly.
of approval.
And on top of all the fungibility issues we just discussed, and she said, well, you know, your definition of fungibility is absolutely right, which actually contradicts CRS's public statements.
Now, what was her, if she agreed with you on the premise, how did she disagree with your conclusion about that?
She said, well, you know, it's kind of like, do you shop at Walmart? It's because Walmart sells contraception. And I said, you know what, I actually try to avoid stores that are going to sell things that are, you know, against my faith. I try to go as local as I can. It's not always possible, but I try. I said, but there's a great big difference between going and purchasing a product at a store and actually just freely giving money to an organization that I know is going to be trying to sell souls down to hell.
Well, also, I mean, she's responsible, or any director of CRS is responsible for stewardship over money being given by Catholics.
That's right.
For specifically Catholic social teaching purposes.
Yep.
So it's not like you going to Walmart with your private money and buying some underwear. It's apples and bananas or whatever, you know. And so the comparison is cute, but it's not valid. If you look at the fact that she's beginning with a bucket load of Catholic money, her identity is Catholic institution being under the Catholic moral teaching of the Church. By the way, Michael, I'm going to quickly give our listeners your URL. It's LepantoInstitute.org. It's a really nice website. It's got great information. It's got all the detail that Michael has come up with in his research over the past decade or more. And we're going to take a short break, be back with Michael Hitchborn in just a moment.
On the next Cresta in the Afternoon.
Our topics during Cresta in the Afternoon toggle between church teaching and then using that teaching to shine a light on our world. We'll look at Christ and culture, church and world, religion and public life, from abortion to Zechariah and everything in between. Biblical criticism, Hollywood productions, academic debate, family and love, prayer and spirituality.
Cresta in the Afternoon from 4 to 6 on 990 Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
Did you know that couples can grow closer even after kids? Research shows that dad's response to mom and baby is the biggest factor in determining whether a couple will stay close once they have children. If dad acts like his wife is letting him or the marriage down, she might grow resentful and distant and even start thinking of her husband as just one more kid she's got to take care of. Romantic, right? But if dad works hard to take as good care of his wife as she is of the baby, she'll come to see her husband as her best friend and source of support through those exhausting first months of parenthood, and the marriage can grow closer and more intimate as a result. Sure, both mom and dad need to make an effort to prioritize their relationship, but dad's loving care provides the energy mom needs to make that possible. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Lenten Reflections is a brand new 4-CD audio collection featuring Father John Ricardo, Sister Ann Shields, and Peter Herbeck. Prepare for Lent and learn how to engage with the sacrament, explore the idea of repentance, and walk through Holy Week. This 4-CD set makes a great gift for RCIA candidates, as well as any Catholics looking to go deeper this Lenten season. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on Lenten Reflections under the Store tab. That's AveMariaRadio.net under the Store tab.
Michael Hitchborn, the founder and president of Lepanto Institute. How long ago did you start work with Lepanto?
We are now in our fourth year.
Yes, and just doing marvelously. And you actually, because I think our listeners need to hear this, we're talking at somewhat of a general level about a general problem, but you actually witnessed with your own eyes how a Catholic Relief Services project was involved in distribution of condoms, correct?
I actually wound up conducting an investigation in the Congo. What I was able to obtain were inventory reports from the project itself showing Catholic Relief Services receiving and distributing 2.25 million units of contraception. And I mean Depo-Provera, two forms of IUDs, oral contraceptives, IUDs, and even surgical sterilization kits.
And if you were able to find that in the Congo in one project, have you extrapolated what that might be in terms of outside the Congo for CRS?
Well, you know, PRI did a huge report on Catholic Relief Services' involvement in the distribution of contraception in Madagascar a couple of years ago, and they were able to show that CRS was itself involved in the distribution of condoms and that it was referring people for contraception to different project areas. I did a different report. This is one that it was a joint report that I did with Population Research Institute, Steve Moser. And in that report, that one was in Kenya, where we found that CRS was implementing programs that were instructing kids as young as 8 about condoms and contraception. I found that they had implemented a video series that was promoting condom use called Shuga. I was able to get all of this through FOIA documents. I got CRS's own reporting to the government saying that they'd implemented all of this. And the thing about the Kenya project, their work in Kenya, CRS denied it up and down, said we never got involved in any of that. We didn't implement these programs. In fact, they even got PEPFAR to change the public record to delete all references of CRS's involvement in these programs from the official report, except they didn't know we had on-the-ground photographic evidence showing that, yeah, they did implement these programs. We had photographs of their manuals, the instructor manuals, the facilitator manuals for these programs from Kenya. We have interviews from students who went through the programs saying, yeah, we learned all about contraception. It was, we learned that it was a healthy choice. And CRS had to backtrack and say, well, we did implement the programs, but it was a sanitized version. And every single time I found a new piece of evidence, something from the FOIA documents saying CRS implemented this program, CRS backtracked further and further and further, saying, well, it happened, but it wasn't our fault. And that was the common line. But it all started, you go back to the beginning of it, CRS said, well, we had nothing to do with it. We did not implement those programs. So now you look at them saying, well, we did, but we implemented a sanitized version. You're starting to see how the story rolls. It's one lie based on another, and then they twist the story just a little bit to give it plausibility.
Now, have you made any – I know that you've had a lot of contact with various bishops, and I don't want you to name any names, and many of whom have been – very concerned about your findings. Have you made any headway in getting some of this sort of cut out of the programming?
I think that yes. I do know that Catholic Relief Services, or at least the new head of Catholic Relief Services, Bishop Mansour, I can say his name, he's the new head of CRS. I know that he would like to see CRS move away from government funding.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful, and I think that's an absolutely great first step.
Well, bravo. I mean, that's really big. What's his name?
Bishop Mansour.
And he is he's the chairman of the committee that oversees CRS.
That's correct.
And he went on record to say this.
He has said that he would like to see CRS move away from that kind of funding. Yes.
Well, that would be wonderful. Have you heard any similar utterance out of the USCCB?
No, I have not.
when the USCCB, which is not a relief organization, it's CRS you could argue, well, they're just trying to do all the relief they can in the name of Catholic, American Catholics or the Catholic Church. Okay, so what if they are able to get federal money to do more work? Okay, table that issue. The USCCB, however, is a far more complex entity, as you said at the beginning of the show. Only some arms of it are program arms in terms of doing good works in the name of the Catholic Church. But when you look at the budget and see that nearly half of the funding of the last year came from the federal government in forms of grants for resettlement of immigrants, doesn't it raise an eyebrow?
Without a doubt. I mean, when you think about what's happening, if the Catholic Church is receiving its money from the federal government, the vast majority of its money from the federal government, then it becomes addicted to that money. And so its policies, its lobbying efforts, its advocacy is going to take on a very distinctly governmental appearance. And so no longer are they so interested in the salvation of souls as they are in conducting the programs they're getting money for so that they can continue to get that money. And it becomes a self-perpetuating problem.
Do you have any idea whether that level of funding is going to continue in this budget that we've just heard sent to Congress?
Well, I can say that the funding will probably continue. It'll probably be less than if the Trump budget passes, which there's a lot of speculation that it won't. But if the Trump budget were to pass, then that funding would be cut. Not entirely, but it would come down probably. The current budget as it is, CRS, USCCB, it's going to be business as usual. I don't think they're going to see much of a dip in their finances.
Why is that? I mean, if that kind of funding is cut,
in the budget, the current budget that was passed by Congress, seems to be maintaining the status quo. Like I said, I don't have any hope.
Even in terms of the immigration funding?
As far as I know, yes.
So they're going to get another nearly $100 million for immigrant resettlement?
Well, if they win the grants for that, and that's the other piece of the puzzle, is how much is the USCCB going to be getting out of that particular program? I mean, it's not just the USCCB doing all of the refugee resettlements. There are other agencies that are doing it, too. I know that Catholic Charities USA is a big one in that. I think they're getting several billion dollars from the federal government, if I remember right.
Have you ever done any? Of course, there's Catholic Charities is an odd organization in that there's a national one that's headquartered in Alexandria, Virginia, and then each diocese has its own localized Catholic Charities. So
right.
it's kind of hard to talk about that because having met with Catholic Charities leadership around from diocese to diocese, there's really no consistency there in terms of
that's correct
attitudes or outlook on these more controversial, or at least what have turned out to be controversial issues.
A couple of years ago, I met with Bishop Slattery out in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he's no longer there, and he retired. But when we were talking about Catholic Charities and some of the other issues that were going on, he looked at me and he said, "My Catholic Charities has absolutely nothing to do with Catholic Charities USA. He said, absolutely nothing. And his Catholic Charities was focused primarily on fighting abortion. And it was absolutely wonderful. He showed me how the program worked. And I said, bravo. You know, I really wish that more Catholic charitable organizations around the country took that on your attitude.
Well, it sounds to me like you've made some progress with CRS, but we won't really know where we stand until we see a line item budget to see if PEPFAR received its $5.7 billion USAID received its $330 million, I believe, and whether the bishops got, the USCCB got another $98 million to resettle refugee immigrants and refugees.
Yeah.
Do you know what number it is exactly that in the past Catholic Charities has received from the government? I mean, is it like CRS? Has it become a vendor of the federal government?
Catholic Charities USA is bigger than CRS, which surprised me. CRS is about $1 billion a year operation, and Catholic Charities USA is about $4.5 billion a year operation. And the last figures that I saw in Catholic Charities USA, and again, I don't have the figures right in front of me, so I'm operating on memory. I think it was about $2 billion that came from the federal government for Catholic Charities USA, I think that was the number that I last saw.
Well, so Catholic Charities USA has programs that it runs independently of all the dioceses, or do they run these programs through the diocese?
I know that they do operate with independent dioceses because there are dioceses that participate with Catholic Charities USA. And I think that that's primarily how they operate. They would then funnel the money down to the local Catholic Charities group, and then that group would then implement whatever program it was that they got the grant for. And if I remember also correctly, that's how it worked down in Texas when there was that big hullabaloo about Texas Catholic Charities helping to move immigrants across the border.
Tell us the details of that. I remember seeing that, but I don't remember the details. When did this happen? What happened?
It was about 2 years ago during the Obama. It was actually when the whole immigration thing first kind of exploded on the scene, and everybody was saying, "Hey, wait a minute, what's this all about? What's going on?" And there was a report, and you're going to make me look this up because the details. It was a couple of years ago, so the details were fuzzy for me. But what I do remember is that there were Catholic Charities groups down in Texas along the border that were helping illegals to find resettlement within their area through the Obama administration, and that's when a lot of that first came to light, and people started to say, "Hey, wait a minute, time out. What's going on?"
Well, I remember being in San Diego at the Legatus meeting, where then the auxiliary bishop, who's now Archbishop of San Francisco, showed us a film that was made by the USCCB, which was a film of a Mexican family, climbing the rocks, going through the Brazos River or the Rio Grande, and entering the United States illegally. And they had this all, they did it as a kind of documentary, the Mexican family being sort of the heroes of the narrative. And I asked the bishop then, and of course he was a little bit shamefaced about showing it. He said he was told to show it. And I said, how can we be glorifying people who are breaking the law? And, he basically said, don't make me defend this. Don't make me defend this. But it sounds to me like Texas Catholic Charities was actually taking that message and doing and helping with people to come in illegally.
There we go. I just found the headline: Catholic Charities took money from Obama to help illegal aliens.
Is that his get across the border?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What did they have? Did they organize groups, or did they train people to go over to Mexico and bring people back? That's kind of interesting. Or who did they send over there to help bring people back? Or did they hire people who were already expert at it and provide the funding?
here's the line. It says a recent study by the University of Texas at El Paso revealed that the Archdiocese of Galveston Houston received $15 million in grants from 2010 to 2013. This money was assisting supposed refugees under the Unaccompanied Alien Children Project. And so what they were doing, they were taking that money and they were resettling people under that particular project. But from the reports that came out, many of them, if not most of them, were illegal.
Well, resettlement to me means there's somebody, in fact, already in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got nowhere to live.
Right.
And so you put them, help provide them a place to live. Resettlement to me doesn't mean going to the other side of the border and proactively bringing people in illegally, or am I wrong?
No, I think you're absolutely right. Resettling someone means going through the appropriate channels to make sure that you have a place to bring somebody who is legitimately over here, either looking for a job or trying to find a better life or simply trying to escape oppression. And there is a process for making that happen and to bringing people in and finding them a place to live. But a lot of times you get anchor families, you get refuge cities and things like that where they basically set people up and they say, okay, we're going to bring you over and we're going to kind of skip the process and just make sure that you've got some place to go. And that's really where the consternation is. You know, when people talk about what's going on with immigration, the real problem has to do with whether people are following due process or not. It's not about whether people are coming into this country. It's not some sort of, you know, racist desire to keep people out. It's about making sure that we know who's coming in. And I think, you know, looking back at Donald Trump's State of the Union address this past January, I was very impressed with what he had to say with regard to the gangs that were coming in and the people that were, the people of the United States who were suffering, people who were being raped and murdered by gang members because of
the M13, the Salvadorians.
Exactly, yes.
Well, you actually not a big Trump supporter at that point in time, were you?
No, and you know, I still have trepidation, but I do like a lot of what he's doing. Like, you know, you can't argue with results, right?
No, and you know I got out there early in support of him.
Yes.
But and I'm not trying to defend everything he's done, by the way, listeners. But on this issue, I do think securing the border is a great idea. But, you know, a good friend of mine, I won't name him, but he's Archbishop here in this country, very great guy, friend, says that it's perfectly licit for anyone to come into our country if they need to find better circumstances because it's natural law. And the natural law is the right to leave your country and enter another. So therefore, a civil law against that is invalid. And so he told me they're not breaking the law in the eyes of God or in terms philosophically, because he called it natural law, and that the law can be ignored.
Well, that's really broken reason.
No, and he's made this publicly. Several bishops, and I think even the bishops' conference has articulated it this way, that civil law that bars people from entering the country who want to enter is in conflict with natural right, natural law.
You know, I've actually given that particular thought a lot of consideration over the last few months, and there are a couple of things that come to mind. For one thing, if it applies on the macro, it has to apply on the micro, right? So if you're going to say that somebody has a right to come into a particular territory that does not belong to them or is not theirs by right, then that applies also to the micro scale, which means people can legally squat on your property and set up shop, and it's their natural right to do that because for whatever reason, they have a natural right to the land. which takes away the idea that there is such a thing as private property. Private property for the individual, private property for a nation. So there's problem number one. But I started thinking about it actually on the grand scale, and it occurred to me that in the book of Revelation, John talks about how he measured the walls of Jerusalem, the new Jerusalem, heaven, and he measured the gates, and he counted the gates. Now, if we're going to look at things that take place in this world as types, you know, if we're going to say that murder of the body is a type of the murder of the soul, for instance, then we also have to look at theft and some of the other sins that come into play. Adultery is a form of betrayal, you know, all of those things. Well, I think the same thing also applies for this idea of illegal immigration or illegal entry into a territory. And you think about if there's a natural right for somebody who does not belong to enter into a country and set up shop and be there by himself on his own, then that would also apply to the heavenly gates. And an alien who does not belong in the heavenly gates should by right be able to go through and set up shop in heaven, even though he doesn't belong there and hasn't gone through the vetting process. But we also know how our Lord treated that, because when he invited people to come in to the wedding feast and he found one man without a wedding garment, our Lord said to him, "Friend, where's your garment?" And the man just kind of sheepishly looked at the floor. And our Lord ordered him to be bound and thrown out into the darkness where there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Now, if that's not extradition or deportation, I don't know what is.
Well, it's interesting to hear the scripture used to create immigration policy, but I congratulate you on such a kind of interesting connection. Seems to me it's easier than that. I mean, the argument can be done philosophically and politically with an analogy, theological analogy. But, you know, because Bishop's immigration policy is very much, it's very scripturally rooted. You're offering a counterexample to that, which I think is very interesting. However, the fact is nobody's going to stand up on the congressional floor and make the argument you just made.
No, of course not.
Yeah, and but I want to remind our listeners that you're Michael Hitchborn. You're the founder and president of Lepanto Institute, doing great work in keeping our Catholic institutions honest about how they're spending Catholic money and how they're impacted by federal dollars and how they're using those dollars. The Lepanto Institute website is www.lepantoinstitute.com. And in the last 2 minutes, Michael, what do you have right in front of you that you're working on?
I'm actually working on a survey of all of the organizations the Catholic Relief Services has passed money through from the years 2008 through 2014, because those are the only data points that I have. And what I've found is that 84% of the money that CRS has distributed to these kinds of organizations went to organizations that are pushing abortion and birth control. We're talking over $170 million to organizations that are spreading the culture of death. And that's what I'm working on right now, and it's a huge problem. And I've also got a couple of other projects that I'm interested in that I'm not really ready to discuss yet, but things that I think will be of interest to people once the news breaks on it.
Well, I congratulate you for what you've done, and I also congratulate you on the attitude and the kind of way you communicate it with respect. And with a sincere desire to serve the church and to serve the bishops.
Thank you, Dale. Yeah, I That's really my biggest thing. I've always tried to approach the bishops and let them know what was going on. It's always been under the idea of helping the church to fight off the culture of death, even if there are some people in the church who are trying to invite it in.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's Michael Hitchborn. He's been on Church and Culture before. He'll be on it again. Michael, look forward to having you next time.
Look forward to it, Deal. Thanks again.
And all of you listening, we're going to have another great guest right after this short message.